The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The airing of this program by this station is not an endorsement or recommendation by the station of the products or services discussed in the program. The station does not guarantee the results of any investments made by a listener to this program.
Josh Pick is the Chief Investment Advisor with Aptus Wealth Management, a state-registered investment advisory firm. This program is sponsored by Aptus Wealth Management. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles discussed should not be considered investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell financial vehicle. This information should not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with professionals to see if any ideas expressed would fit their specific situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Securities can fluctuate and when redeemed may be more or less than when originally invested.
Thank you for joining us here on the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. I'm Bruce Hooley with Josh Pick of Aptus Wealth Management. Aptus located in Lewis Center, just off Route 750, easy to get to, and they make it easy for you to investigate the possibility of becoming an Aptus client like my wife and I are. Just sit for the free consultation, no obligation at all. Let them get to know you, and you will get to know them, and you can talk about where you are in your retirement planning, your retirement investing. It's not enough to save. You have to invest with the way prices have increased over the years and the things that we need to plan for now that we didn't have to plan for in the past, like long-term care, certainly investment and prudent investing, and a plan, a blueprint for retirement is very, very important. Josh and his team can help you with that. So reach out and take advantage of that free consultation. 614-917-1040 is their number. 614-917-1040 to set up that consultation. You can also make your appointment online at their website, which is Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. And Josh, as we have discussed many times before, everybody's at a different place on the retirement continuum. Everybody has a different strategy. The younger you are, the earlier you start, the better off you are. If you delay too long, you miss important windows and important benchmarks in getting to the amount of money that people are going to need in retirement. And let's talk about maybe some numbers that I think will probably scare people who are in their 40s. A survey that you were telling me about that set a number that people in their 40s will need when they reach retirement. That number was quite a bit higher than the number that I've typically heard, which is the $1 million number. That doesn't sound adequate based upon what you told me you saw in this particular survey.
Yeah, well, I think surveys and statistics, you need to take them with a grain of salt. We've talked about that a lot. And it wasn't that this particular survey said, this is what people need. It was that they surveyed people in their 40s and asked them two questions. How much money do you think you need saved to feel wealthy? And the number was $1 million. So that's the number that you were probably referencing just now.
Of course. Then they asked them to be a millionaire.
Absolutely. And then they asked them a subsequent question. How much money would you require to feel worry-free? Quote, unquote. And the number was $2.7 million. So almost three times as much to be worry-free. So I guess wealthy and worry-free are two distant things. Now, why am I even sharing this information? Because there was more kind of subsequent information in that article talking about the survey that I hadn't necessarily thought of before. One was that people in their 40s are now considered the sandwich generation, which I hadn't heard that concept before.
No, nor had I. I've heard of Gen Z and... let's see, there's Gen X, and there's obviously the baby boomer generation, Gen Y. What is the sandwich generation?
The concept of the sandwich generation, and maybe this is coined just in this article, but is that for the first time in relative history, we have a generation of 40-year-olds whose parents didn't necessarily prepare themselves for retirement as well as the parents before, large in part because of what we've talked about in the past, the kind of demise of the pension. So the people who are now retiring are kind of that first run generation of people that had to do it on their own through their own savings. And a lot of people didn't do as well as they should have. So people in their 40s oftentimes are helping support the retirements of their parents, while simultaneously people in their 40s are raising arguably the most expensive generation of kids in history. Why are they the most expensive generation? Well, look at housing costs. Yep. If you want to have kids, you got to have a bigger house. Look at all the costs, food costs. We've been talking about inflation. Imagine I have three boys, two of which are teenagers. I assure you food costs are much higher with three boys in your house than when it's just you and your wife. So the costs of raising kids have gone up. And then you have people in their 40s not trying to give everybody an out and make them feel like they can be victims. But at the same time, they're kind of stuck in the middle trying to figure out, how am I going to support all of this? And apparently their crude math has given them an answer of $2.7 million is the only way they can support all of this.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you think about, like, I think we all have in our own mind, like, benchmarks for what things cost or even big ticket items cost. Like, I can remember 20 plus years ago, I bought a new truck and I was able to get it for under $20,000. You can't touch that. I can remember what my parameters were for a manageable credit card bill every month. I mean, that's shot through the roof. I have daughters, one in college, one getting ready to go to college. The college my one daughter wants to go to, looked it up online. The annual cost of attending this particular college is what I remember I used to look at and see attached to universities like Harvard and Duke. And believe me, the place she's looking at does not have the reputation of a Harvard or a Duke. So I can understand why that 2.7 million number is a number that people need to feel comfortable or confident or whatever. Was there anything in the survey or anything you can tell people, potential clients of yours or clients of yours, about how they can maybe gain back some peace of mind, which I've talked all the time about how my wife and I became clients because we just felt like we gained peace of mind having you and the Aptus team managing our investments for our retirement. What kind of alleviates people's concerns that might leap to mind when they see that or when they state that $2.7 million number that they need to feel comfortable?
Yeah, the two things that kind of jumped off the page of both what they felt would make their lives better on one hand that they haven't done, and on the other hand, people that had done these things statistically gauged themselves as much more worry-free, regardless of the amount of income they had. And one was having a plan. So, and I think oftentimes that's the most difficult thing to do, right? If you look at a catastrophic scenario, you know, there's a car wreck and there's a bunch of people just standing around going, what do I do? What do I do? And then somebody shows up from an ambulance and they go, give me this, give me this, give me this. It makes immediately everybody feel better because somebody's taking charge because they have a course of action. Well, similarly with your finances, it can become overwhelming and you just almost throw your arms up in the air and go, I don't know. So as soon as you have a plan that makes people feel better, and percentage wise, how much better? Almost two times better. So that's pretty significant. And the second one was, and this may sound self-fulfilling, but I'm just going off of the article from MSN Money, and it just happens to point in my direction. 76% of people said they felt a lot less worry when they were working with a professional. So again, having that plan, having the guidance, and knowing that you're taking steps. I would probably put this akin to, you know, you're worried about your health. Do you feel better when you go get blood work and you find out you're okay? Obviously, you feel better. Was that free? No, it's not free. You have to go pay for it. But what is the value of that to you? And I think the same applies to finance.
Let me take people behind the curtain a little bit. Like, I'm not ready to retire, but I am getting to the point where I knew I couldn't make a mistake. And my wife is younger than me, but, you know, I don't want my wife working to support me in retirement. So we went in, we met with Josh, and I think people might have in their mind this belief that I'm going to go into a financial planner and he's going to tell me what to do. Well, that's not exactly how it worked with our consultation with Josh. We had a conversation. He gauges our tolerance for, you know, volatility and what we want to accomplish and where we are. And then I vividly remember when you presented to us like a blueprint, a plan, like you talked about, a strategy, whatever people want to talk about, with two distinctly different charts or courses that depending upon our tolerance for risk, our tolerance for volatility, one would lead us to a certain place, one might lead us to a certain place. And we never felt like we were being told what to do or we being forced to do something we didn't want to do. And I think that's important for people to understand about the consultation that they can set up when they call your office at 614-917-1040, Josh, is that it's a process, it's a conversation, and you'll present scenarios to people that then hopefully, you know, I think for us, it was easy to arrive at the same viewpoint that you had. But this is not something that you're forcing down people's throats and they don't come away from it feeling great about it or they're feeling uncertain about it. In our case, it was like, yeah, you presented options to us that we didn't even know existed.
Yeah, nobody's life should tracks the same way, right? I mean, if you look throughout your life, it's different than your neighbors, et cetera. So nobody has the same plan necessarily. Does that mean that the concepts and the rules of finance apply? Yeah, I mean, if I apply a 3% interest rate to your account, it's going to be a 3% interest rate, whether you're with me or somebody else. I think the big difference is it's your choice of what plan you want. And quite frankly, not everybody should be invested hyper aggressively in the stock market, for example. There are a lot of clients that I have that absolutely are, and that's fine. And again, not to pull back the curtain too strong, but I wouldn't say that you and your wife are significant risk takers. So what do you do? You say, here's one path, here's another path, and here's another path, and here's the destinations. And if you're happy with one of the destinations by having lower risk, then that's absolutely your choice. Or some people would say, I would rather save $100 a month and take lower risk and end up at the same point than if I took higher risk and saved $100 less a month. That is your choice. But I think the importance is, again, pointing back to that survey that we talked about, is I need to have a plan and I need to feel comfortable in the plan. And then I need to have accountability to follow through on the plan. And I think having an advisor makes you feel comfortable in the plan. But part of my job, either fortunately or unfortunately, just like having a trainer at the gym, is keeping you accountable to show up at 5:30 a.m. and keeping you accountable to invest. And don't show up to my office at 5:30. I'm talking about the trainer, but keeping you accountable to actually follow through on the plan.
Well, and yeah, and that's absolutely true. And the thing about, you know, your role as a fiduciary is you are legally required to do what's best for your client, but your client also has to follow through on what the blueprint is. I mean, you can have a great blueprint for a new home. If the architect doesn't follow it, if the builder doesn't follow what the architect tells them to do, it's not going to work. So there's responsibility on both sides. Now, I think what scares people and what scares me is I feel a degree of personal responsibility for the decisions that I make as they affect, you know, if we stopped saving, if we stopped investing, that would be on me. What scares me now that I have the peace of mind from knowing I have a professional like you and your colleagues taking care of our investments is something that happens outside of your control, outside of my control. And the number that scares me is our federal debt. And I keep hearing about our federal debt skyrocketing. It's at $34 trillion. Back in 2008, we had a housing crash. We've had the dot-com bubble burst. We've had depressions. We've had recessions. There are some things that, first of all, that underscores to me the need to have a financial counselor, a financial analyst, an investment guy like yourself on it, because you see those things coming in advance and help us bulletproof our portfolios for those. But the debt thing scares me, Josh. I just don't feel like, because in my personal financial world, I can't run up debt and be prosperous long term. Our government can do what I can't do. They can print money, and they do print money. But is there something that there's a consensus on, or if you're free, if you're comfortable offering your own thoughts about where we are progressing toward and what the ramifications and fallout might be from that mounting federal debt?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there's not a day that goes by where somebody doesn't bring up the debt. And usually subsequently following that conversation, it's how can I keep money in the US dollar, right? But the debt, you're right. It doesn't seem like anybody cares. Matter of fact, we just printed, what was it, $5 or $6 trillion over the last few years. So the outstanding debt is $34 trillion, and we just printed six of it in the last few years. And everybody goes, well, who cares? But if you really look at that debt, there's about $34 trillion in outstanding public debt. However, about $7 trillion of that is kind of misleading because it's really what the government owes itself. It's kind of like a trust fund slash funny money, meaning like outstanding debt as it applies to things like Social Security and outstanding debt as it applies to We just, you know, move some zeros on a balance sheet to make it kind of creative. So really the outstanding debt is about $27 trillion, but still $27 trillion is a crazy amount. So Penn Wharton, pretty smart school you were talking about. I can't even imagine what that annual amount is if your daughter wanted to go there. But nobody's going to argue that Penn Wharton doesn't know what they're talking about. They actually came up with something called the Penn Wharton budget model. And modeling the federal debt is nothing new. Matter of fact, if you go all the way back to, I think it was Diamond and Ara Block or some crazy name, started back in the 60s. And this has kind of gone on and on and on to now, how does the Congressional Budget Office kind of look at debt? And really the Penn Wharton model is kind of been picked as the gold standard. So this is what they say. They say that the current debt is about 98% of GDP. When the debt hits 200% of GDP, and I'm actually going to read this because they say this so specifically, I don't want to get it wrong. Under current policy in the United States has 20 years for corrective action, at which point, if they take no action, no amount of future tax increases or spending cuts could avoid the government defaulting on its debt, whether explicitly or implicitly. What that means is if we keep doing what we're doing and we take no action, I hate to say it this way, it's very dramatic, and I promise at the end of this, because it sounds like doomsday or stuff, I will give my advice on what I think you should do so you don't get wrapped up in your dollars being worth nothing. But what it says is if we keep doing what we're doing, in 20 years, there is no righting the ship. And all U.S. treasuries, all that money we borrowed to other countries, all that money that we borrowed, we're going to default on it. We can't afford it. And they went further to then say, well, what if interest rates go up or down and how does that affect it? And of course, it moves the needle one direction or the other. But what this says is once we hit a certain threshold, we're smoked. So we have to do something in the next 200 years. What are some of those things we have to do? We have to correct Social Security. We have to do something. We have to rein in our budget to some degree. Now, I think I said in the first segment that here we're talking about we have no money, but we're spending $1 billion to make places more energy efficient so that they're not using, quote, dirty energy. And I have young kids, Bruce. I'm all about green energy as much as the next person. But when you say things like in 20 years, we're going to default as a country, we really have to focus our efforts on what is most important for the virility of the U.S. economy. So, you know, I hate to say, people say, what's going to happen with the debt? It's kind of like people say, what's going to happen with Social Security? And the answer is somewhere around 2032, Social Security is going to, the trust fund's running out of money. Well, in this example, sometime around 2044, we're going to default on our debt if we don't do anything different.
So I want to pursue what I heard you say to see if it's accurate. You said we're right now 98% of GDP with our debt.
Correct.
Okay. So did the article say that once we get to 200%, once our debt becomes 200% of GDP, that that's where there's no turning back?
Correct.
So obviously we have no compunction about racking up more debt. We've done it for quite some time and we amped it up on steroids during the pandemic. So we have time to turn back, but I don't know. I mean, it's taken us as a country 245 years to get to the point where we're $34 trillion in debt. I'm afraid that the people who have the capacity to control this will look at it and go, 245 more years, like, or even the pace we're going, another 100 years, I won't be here and I won't have to suffer the electoral consequences of continuing down this road. Because I think that's what it is, Josh, is as I assess it, and both parties are guilty of it. I'm not trying to be partisan here. Is that nobody wants to take a responsible financial position and risk the electoral consequences for being the bad guy who makes us live within a federal budget.
Yeah, budgets always increase, they never decrease, right? And you're absolutely right. If you look at it as a partisan issue, the deficit's gone up every single presidency for the last 50 years.
Yeah.
So you can't blame a president. You know, the growth rate maybe has been different. But, you know, I think, can it be corrected? Well, let's euphorically look at how it could be corrected. You know, if you look back at the late 90s, something that really helped out the Clinton administration, for example, with their budgeting was we had this little new invention called the personal computer that ended up in everybody's house. Then we had the internet. And these were kind of pretty big things that created, you know, occupations that never existed before. So theoretically, we could have some sort of technological advance that could boost GDP by 50%, right? Well, that would be, boy, that would buy us some time. And man, I hope that really happens. But I'm with you. I don't think anybody's going to handle it until they have to. Just like I don't think anybody's going to handle Social Security until they have to. So how can you handle this? Well, you can, you know, start burying bunkers in your backyard and be a prepper and think that it's all going to be, you know, Armageddon and revelations in the Bible, right?
Yep. Buy gold. Everybody wants to buy gold.
Everybody wants to buy gold. But there are easier ways to look at this. So let's look at Zimbabwe, for example, or look at Venezuela or any of these places that have crazy inflation. They have stories of, I went to the front of the grocery store and apples were, you know, a dollar. And by the time I took it to the cash register, they were $2. So what didn't lose value? Your money or the apple? Well, the apple didn't lose in money, right? So this is the big thing that we, you and I talk about all the time of investing versus saving. And saving is good. We need to have an emergency fund. We need to make sure that if we lose our jobs, we have some liquid cash. But ultimately, we should save. So let's use an example. And I don't care what you, or we should invest rather. You know, we could argue about what's a better investment, real estate versus stocks versus X versus X. But you want to invest as much as you possibly can in things that would inherently be an inflation hedge. So, for example, if Coca-Cola, and I use them as an example all the time, and I apologize for that, but it's very easy to understand. If inflation goes through the roof, is it fair to say that a can of Coca-Cola is going to get more expensive?
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, if that gets more expensive, is it safe to say that profit margins, if they're a percentage, will go up?
I think so.
The profit will go up. So the point here is you should be investing and not just saving. Does it mean run out and buy gold? Well, what you're saying right there is I think that gold is going to outpace cash. All right. Well, you might be right. You're probably right. Maybe you're wrong. But either way, you haven't invested in anything that generates income for you. All you've done is preserve the value of your capital. Well, here we try and grow the value of your capital relative to inflation. So again, there's a myriad of investments you can do there, but all of them fall into the category of investing versus just saving. So don't panic. If you look at the best example, I was talking to my business partner today and another company. And I said, I just happened to get this statement and I've kept this stock forever. When I graduated high school, one of my graduation presents was $50 in Coca-Cola stock. No kidding, right? Mm-hmm. And the only reason I never sold it is because he gave me physical shares and I, you know, typical 18-year-old kid, I lost them. And to get the shares to be able to sell them, I got to pay $50. Well, when you only have $50 in stock, you're not going to pay $50 to sell $50. So I've just kind of kept it. And by the time I would have paid the $50, well, then I didn't really need the money and I didn't care. So I've just kind of left it alone. So I graduated high school in 1996, 45 years old. I got the statement yesterday. It's worth $500 today. Wow. So if you do the math on that, that's averaged 9% per year, roughly. Rounded. So I didn't do any sort of crazy investing. That's just somebody gave me some shares of Coca-Cola. Has that kept pace with inflation? It's far drastically exceeded the pace of inflation. If I would have put that in the highest yielding savings account I could find, would that have kept pace with inflation?
No,
absolutely
chance.
Not. So the point is come up with a plan and invest and then quit worrying so much and you'll be fine.
Yeah. And these are the kinds of things that Josh and his team help you understand when you sit for your free consultation. Set that up by calling their office in Lewis Center, 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. You can make your appointment online at Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. I know a lot of people may say, well, all I have is a piece of paper. No, you have a piece of the company. When you own stock in Coca-Cola or Amazon or Apple or whatever company, they're a publicly traded company. You own a share of that company and you want to obviously make prudent investments in good companies. You don't want to load up on Enron stock or, you know, whatever. You want to make good choices. And that's why the value of a fiduciary, somebody who's legally obligated to do what's best for you, somebody who is paying attention to this closely every day, cannot be undervalued. You don't want to make a mistake with your retirement savings, particularly if you're in the age bracket that I am or you're 60 years old and you want to get to retirement and have that peace of mind. My wife and I certainly gained that by sitting with Josh and having the conversation and a meeting of the minds, a prudent blueprint for our future. 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. Josh, as always, great to talk with you, and we look forward to talking to you again next week.
You as well. Thanks, Bruce.
Thanks for joining us on the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. I'm Bruce Hooley here with Josh Pick of Aptus Wealth Management. And for the next half hour, we'll be talking about how you can maximize your investing, building toward a secure financial future, financial independence in retirement. It's a little different now than it used to be. Don't have those long pensions and 40 years service at one company. Myself, many of others have moved around to different jobs, and certainly you have pockets of money here and there. Aptus is someone that I entrust with our retirement savings for my family, and you can sit for a free consultation with them, no obligation at all, by calling their office, 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. They're located in Lewis Center, just off Route 750, not far from 23 and 270. You can also make your appointment online at Aptus Wealth, A-P-T-U-S, aptuswealth.com. And Josh, you have the ability to and the foresight to have a lot of different investment vehicles for people, but over time, it's pretty inarguable that the best place for people to be over a 20, 30-year period is the U.S. stock market. And I'm curious, are there numbers out there about where we are in the United States of America now? As it's certainly become over the last 20 years easier for the average everyday Joe to own stocks with, Charles Schwab and different online investing and things like that. Where are we in terms of our investment in the stock market as people move toward retirement age?
Yeah, we've kind of been forced in that direction, too. I mean, there was a time not long ago when we had defined benefit plans, i.e. the pension. Those have gone by the wayside. So now everybody has 401ks for the most part, which those 401ks large in part enable you to invest in the stock market through mutual funds, ETFs, et cetera, or through your company plan. So, you know, we could conclude then that the lion's share of people should own some stocks to some capacity if they want to have a viable chance at retirement beyond just trying to live off of Social Security. But the statistics really don't necessarily point in that direction. With less than 60% of U.S. households, somewhere around 58% of U.S. households, owning stocks to some capacity, which still you would think, well, okay, 60%, that's almost two-thirds, that's not terrible, but there's some more statistics that go along with that, and that is that 93% of all the U.S. stocks owned are owned by the top 10% of wealth in the United States. And the bottom 50% of wealth in the United States, or the bottom 50% of people, if you want to say it that way, only own 1% of the stocks. So you have 93% of them owned by the top 10%, another 6 owned by the 40 to top 10, and then the bottom 50 only owning 1%. So that kind of points to a pretty big challenge that we're going to be facing in the future.
So do you think that's born out of people being unaware how they can invest in the stock market, like through their 401k, through, you know, those kinds of vehicles, or what do you make of that? And that's, to me, a very surprising statistics that 93% of the stocks are owned by the top 10%. I mean, it could be what people just aren't prioritizing retirement, because typically now, if you get a 401k option at your work, they're going to put you in a group of Vanguard or Fidelity or somebody like that, and you're going to have the opportunity to have stock in your portfolio.
Yeah, I think it would be easy to conclude that, well, you know, the bottom 50% aren't making enough money to invest in the stock market. But statistically, that doesn't really prove to be accurate. As a matter of fact, what we find through statistics is that even if a company offers a match, meaning if you put in 3% of your money, we will match you 3% of your money, meaning we'll give you a guaranteed 100% rate of return day one, that doesn't seem to increase participation in the 401k. So is it because of the amount of money that we make? Is it because of the lifestyle choices that we choose? Or is it because we're not prioritizing? Is it because we don't have enough discipline? Is it because of a lack of education? I mean, I would certainly be, this is all conjecture. I have no idea what the answer is. But what isn't conjecture is that if you don't put yourself in a position of savings, particularly early, you're going to put your future in a much more difficult position. So, you know, I think we tend to think on kind of opposite ends of the spectrum. Well, if I don't save anything, then I'm in really dire straits when I retire. Or, well, you know, I'm not making enough money now, so I'll start investing later to get there. Well, we've talked a million times about the power of compounding.
Yeah.
And ultimately, if you don't save anything today, 10 years from now, you're going to have to save at least twice as much to end up in the same spot. So I think we can't say anything other than, regardless of the reason, a large chunk of the population is not prioritizing their future, and that's a big problem.
It is a big problem, and you can take care of that by sitting with Josh and having him show you how your decisions now have a dramatic impact on you later on as part of the free consultation that you can get at Aptus Wealth Management. They're located in Lewis Center, just off Route 750. 614-917-1040 is their office number, 614-917-1040. Call their office, make your appointment, go in, get to know Josh, get to know his team, let them get to know you. You can make your appointment online at Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. I really think you hit on something there with you listed in your explanation two factors that I think are really the same factor. Number one, lifestyle choices, and then not prioritizing retirement. I think we've become so consumerism focused in America, bigger house, bigger car, newer car, closet full of clothes, those kinds of things, that we think we don't have the money. We think we don't make enough money. But what we're not doing is we're not realizing how we're penalizing ourselves long term by not making, I don't even consider them sacrifices, but a lot of people would consider them sacrifices in the short term.
Well, think of how many times you've heard somebody say, I went to a car lot to look. I wasn't planning on buying a car, and I came home with a car. I mean, I have a friend. It's hilarious. I always tell him never go out to lunch, because he'll go out to lunch and come home with a new car.
Mm.
And how few of those people are paying cash for the car? Very, very, very few. Some very small percentage. So how quickly we are willing to jump into a payment, with the average car payment in the United States being north of $900 today, we'll jump into a $900 payment that we're committed to for the next 5, 6, 7 years, but we will hesitate to save $50 a month because we don't know if we can afford it. So you can afford $950 for a car payment with very little thought, but there's no way you can afford to save any money. I think what you said is spot on, and that is what we prioritize. We're prioritizing the shiny new thing, the keeping up with the Joneses, rather than financial security, and then we rationalize it. And I'm sure, you know, you have children, I have children.
Yep.
We've heard this rationalization amongst them and amongst ourselves. And that, well, I mean, let me tell you why this car was a good deal. Let me tell you why it made sense for me to buy it. But how often have you heard somebody try and rationalize the reason why they increased their savings from $300 to $400 a month? And usually the justification for not doing that is, well, you know, at the rate I'm at right now, I'm not going to be able to retire until I'm 100 anyway, so why worry? Or insert some logical, you know, illogical answer. But the reality is many of us don't have the choice as to whether or not we're going to retire. Actually, statistically, there's a larger percentage chance that we'll be forced into retirement from a reason that we did not predict, whether it's our own health, taking care of someone else's health, being let go from a job, downsized, economic conditions, et cetera, and you're not going to have the choice. So if you care about having control at any semblance over your financial life, you better start prioritizing saving, investing, and coming up with a plan as soon as possible.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I had someone very close to me this week, age 33, had a stroke. Now, fortunately, the consequences are not dire, but I know that was a big, like, wow moment in terms of, hey, you know, what we had planned, certainly not what we got here in the short term. And unfortunately, I'm looking at some numbers here that talk about the millennial generation, which that's people born from 1981 to 1996. So we're talking about people who are age 28 to 43-ish. And a study by Edward Jones, a financial investment company, says that they view millennials as the most susceptible to financial difficulties later on in life, because they've been, you know, they kind of started working about 2008 in the Great Recession. They got hit with the COVID pandemic. And the numbers are staggering to me that two-thirds of working millennials, two-thirds people aged 28 to 43 have no retirement savings. Two-thirds, 66% of millennials ages 28 to 43 have no retirement savings. Now, you get a cross-section of people coming into your office, Josh. Do you find that dovetails, that number dovetails with the ages of people that come in and have prioritized their retirement enough to come in and become clients, or at least have a conversation with you in the no obligation consultation?
Well, you know, if I look across a cross section statistically of our clients, I wouldn't say that that is representative, but it would be reasonable to assume that the people who are in that age category that are coming to see us are proactive, are disciplined, sure, and that's why they're there. So, you know, I can tell you that there are millennials in that age category that are doing a tremendous job of saving, but I think the disparity is growing. I think that's the problem. I think if we look at if we looked at baby boomers and we said, what's the disparity of wealth there? We would find even a greater disparity of wealth amongst that 28 to 43-year-old. And again, I'm guessing here, but just from what I've seen. And what's concerning about that is, remember those years between 28 and 43. Think of how good of a head start you're getting and how much compounding you're going to get off of that. And if you lag, if they're 43 now and they haven't started, and they have the same conversation with their 53, they are way, way, way behind the eight ball. They better get started as soon as possible. So, you know, I think this is just kind of a window into what the current kind of psyche of the U.S. economy is. It's, you know, prioritize 50 years from now, 40 years from now. Deal with, and you know, the government isn't a very good example of this either. Deal with Social Security that's going to run aground in 2032. In 2032, let's worry about the U.S. debt when it runs aground. Let's not worry about the fact that we're deficit spending, and I think we're seeing that in our own households.
Yeah, and I think to me, this is even more dire in the fact you just mentioned Social Security. Like, I'm old enough, I can count on Social Security not going away. Age 28 to 43, I'm not so sure you have that guarantee there, and this is interesting. They say only 5% of working millennials are saving adequately for retirement. But here's an encouraging number. 66% of millennials, so the same percentage that have no savings at all, 66% prefer in-person interactions with financial advisors. So I would highly recommend, if you're in that age group, hey, you can have that face-to-face interaction with Josh and the Aptus team. 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040 to set it up, or Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. Take me through the conversation with somebody who might heed this advice and say, okay, got to get started, come in, have that conversation with you.
Yeah, I mean, step one, we're going to talk about what are your goals. And you'd say, well, I'm not sure what my goals are. Well, then we're going to start addressing what some of the goals should be. And those goals start with, well, I want to make sure that I get myself out of a debt position, or I want to make sure that I establish an emergency fund sufficient enough to make me as bulletproof as possible should myself or my wife lose their job. And then that kind of climbs from there all the way up into including retirement, estate planning, estate preservation, eliminating taxes, mitigating the issues of long-term care, et cetera, through that kind of planning process. And in meeting number two, we're going to analyze where you are today and kind of show you along that continuum, where are the shortfalls? And then in meeting number three, we'll give you the actual blueprint. So this is a working document. It's called a blueprint on purpose, because these are not, well, you know, conceptually, this would probably work. These are very definitive. If we do this, then it will in fact work. And then not until meeting number four. So if you're waiting for that, you know, big shoe to drop or the bait and switch, it just never happens. Meeting number four, we'll decide, is this mutually beneficial for the both of us? Are you a good client for us? And are we the right fit for you? And the decision's ultimately yours, and you can probably speak to that. There's really no hard selling here. As a matter of fact, I would say there's no selling. The choice is yours. The only thing I can guarantee you through the process is you'll learn a lot.
Yeah, I can guarantee there's no selling. I mean, I've told this story before. I'll tell it again. I knew Josh for more than 2 years, and I finally had to say to him, you know, are we ever going to have a conversation about whether or not I should become a client? I mean, there's no pressure at all. And he's very successful at what he does. He's got plenty of clients, but certainly he's not against having more. And I highly recommend him and his knowledge and expertise. And, you know, I was thinking, like, one of the things about millennials, like maybe they're 28 to 43, they're having children. It is, I think, even beneficial, Josh, if they might not think of like a 529 plan, saving for college, as savings. But from my perspective, as it relates to retirement, at least it ingrains the discipline of, hey, we're not spending every dollar we get. We're taking a posture where we understand that we have to put something aside from what we're bringing in order to prepare for something down the road. That can be a helpful attitude for people to learn to adopt.
Yeah, getting into the discipline and the habit of savings is very critical. And I always recommend people, if you're fresh out of college and you're going, how in the world am I going to save anything? I'm barely affording my rent. If you just get in the habit of saving automatically $10 a pay, $10 a month, $25, yep. We're not talking about crazy dollars here. You would be shocked at how quickly that money can add up. And I don't want anybody to fall into the trap that if I earmark this money for X, it is lost forever. Let's think about this. Let's take the worst example ever. If you put all your money into a 401k and your 401k had a match, technically you cannot get access to those dollars until 59 and a half, or if you're retired, 55. But let's just say until you're about 60 years old. So you say, I'm 22 years old today. What if an emergency happens? What if, you know, people always use dramatic, you know, what if my legs get chopped off and I need the money? All right. Well, okay. So you're going to pay a 10% penalty on the $100,000 you've acquired, or have nothing. I think this is pretty kind of a silly argument. The discipline of savings is very, very important.
Yeah, no doubt. And you can certainly get deeper into that and gain a greater understanding of that by setting up your free consultation with Josh and the Aptus team. Call their office, 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. Their online address to make your appointment that way is Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. So here's a perception that I have that is confirmed by the story that I saw, that I talked about people in the millennial generation and younger, like their concept of bigger house, bigger car, newer this, newer that. As I perceive people a little older than I am, as they get to retirement, I perceive people in retirement who are now drawing on their retirement investments being as conservative as they can be. So I want to share with you a JP Morgan Chase study of 31,000 people as they approached retirement or entered retirement between 2013 and 2018. It says here in the study that the vast majority, 84% of retirees who had reached that age where they have to take a certain amount out of their retirement, those required minimum distributions that you talk about a lot, 80% of them had not reached RMD age and had yet to take anything out of their retirement. So my perception is the people who are older, who are already there where we're all striving to get, because that maybe, and what I view as generational differences, is that even when they get to retirement, they're hesitant to like take out what maybe they could take out, because this story goes on to say that a lot of people wait so long to take their requirement minimum distributions or take only their required minimum distributions that they end up leaving a big chunk of money in their retirement accounts when they die.
Yeah, and you know, we could, again, this is all conjecture, we're guessing on why they're doing that, but let's kind of address why that might not be the best choice. If you have plenty of other money, so let's use the perfect example, the ideal situation. I have $1 million in my IRAs. I'm 70 years old. I don't have to take minimum required distributions till I'm 73. I'm retired. I'm living off of Social Security and other assets or other investments, and I'm doing just fine. So I'm not going to take out money from my IRA because I don't want to pay taxes on money that I don't even need. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is at some future date, you are going to be forced to take money out of your IRA. And at that point, you don't have any control over how much in taxes you're going to pay or what even the tax rate is. Whereas if you did some calculating, it could make sense to take some distributions today, convert those into a Roth IRA, and forever exonerate the challenges of taxes in the future, not only for yourself, but for your kids. So let's take it a step further. Well, why would I want to do that? You know, I heard the funniest thing today, and I got to give credit where credit's due. I heard it on a on a Dave Ramsey little snippet on Instagram, and a guy said, well, I want to figure out a way to spend my money because I don't want my kids to end up growing up to be waiters. And he said, waiters? He said, yeah, waiting for me to die, which I thought was pretty clever, right? So we don't, if you don't want your kids to be waiters, you want to, your goal is not to leave a giant nest egg to your kids. It's about preserving what you worked so hard for. So by doing these Roth conversions, it allows us to do two things. One, minimize the amount of taxes that we will pay over our lifetime. I would rather pay 12% today than 22% tomorrow. Number two, we could be able to mitigate how much in taxes we end up paying on other assets. For example, your Social Security is taxed upon your outside income. So there may be some advantages there. There might not be. But then in the long run, when you do leave it to your kids, they're going to be forced to take the money out over 10 years from a traditional IRA vis-a-vis the Secure Act, which was just passed not too long ago. Well, what is their tax rate going to be? You could see this money that you saved and you were disciplined and you worked so hard for just getting bled away by the impact of taxes. But let's add in a third thing. So about, 50-50 shot that everyone that's listening to this is going to need some sort of long-term care before they pass. And when we go there, we all have the same plan currently. And that plan is use all my money till I go broke. And then Medicaid picks up the tab. Now there's a bunch of ways to skin that cat and figure out a way to make it a little bit more financially beneficial to you. And one of those ways is through trust work. In other words, making yourself quote unquote look broke on paper because you've given your money away to trust, so that Medicaid starts picking up the tab earlier. The problem with that is you cannot transfer IRA dollars into a trust. And I've yet to meet anybody who wants to liquidate a $1 million IRA, pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes on the off chance that they may end up needing to go into a long-term care facility because it's a coin flip. But if you had your money in a Roth, that money is now mobile, which means I can move it to a trust anytime I want. Which means, should you ever decide to do that, rather than paying 22 or 28 or 37% in taxes, you've predetermined how much money you're willing to pay in taxes because you controlled it. So don't just kind of hold off until you have to. Plan so that you're in control.
Yeah, and that is an undervalued aspect of the benefit of being an Aptus client, is that Josh is a guy who just continually amazes me with his knowledge and expertise when it comes to strategically, legally minimizing your tax burden. This is what you get when you get a fiduciary, somebody who's legally obligated to do what's best for you. That's what they are at Aptus. Set up your consultation, 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. Make your appointment online, Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. I think I know the answer to this, but just because people may be listening who don't understand, you said, you don't have a problem with required minimum distributions when you have a Roth IRA. Just in 30 seconds or so, just explain why Roth IRAs are different from like an SEP or a 401k or a 457 or a 403b.
Yeah, ultimately a Roth is the only line in the tax code that allows you to put money in. Now, granted, it's after tax. You've already paid taxes on these dollars. But every nickel you will ever earn in the way of interest, regardless of what you invested in, whether it's a money market or the most aggressive stock you can find, will forever be tax-free as long as you hold that money in that account for 5 years. And that is true for not only you, but the people that will ultimately inherit it from you when you pass. So it is the single best line in the tax code for tax-free gains amongst investments.
Yeah, and that's something you can talk about with Josh, whether you're eligible for a Roth or not, whether you can convert to a Roth, should convert to a Roth, all those kinds of things. No topics off the table when you sit for your free, no obligation consultation with Josh and the Aptus team. Again, they're located in Lewis Center, very easy to get to, not far from 23 and 270, right there at Route 750. 614-917-1040 is their number, 614-917-1040. Josh, thanks for your time. We'll talk to you again next week.
You as well. Sounds great. Thanks, Bruce.
The airing of this program by this station is not an endorsement or recommendation by the station of the products or services discussed in the program. The station does not guarantee the results of any investments made by a listener to this program.
three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.